Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. The title of this broadcast is World Watchers. It's program number 717, September the 2nd, 1985. This year is going so fast. I used to make some comment at the end of each month. I couldn't believe it. I was even out buying Christmas presents this week. But this is September, and this year is just moving too quickly for me. I don't know about you. This broadcast is controversial. There's a lot of material that new listeners are not familiar with. I suggest you tape record it, get used to taping it while it's on the air. And it's on other stations. If you write to me, I can tell you, or telephone me, I can tell you where they are. And you can listen to them there. And also, if you send a self-addressed stamped envelope and tell me which broadcast you heard, such as this is 717, I will send you a bibliography, a printed sheet of the material, the sources of material that I used for this one-hour broadcast. Just an interesting fact to start the evening off. During the Vietnam War, I used to hear the scandal that it was costing $1 million an hour. As a matter of fact, I heard recently that the Vietnam veterans have gotten about $82 million for educational funds. We never did total up the cost of that war. But I just read this past week that in 1980, that's about 8 years since the Vietnam War, the U.S. government was spending $18 million an hour on their military. In 1984, last year, we were spending $27 million every hour. And with the political projections for the next few years, by 1988, the military will cost us $44 million an hour. Ask yourself what we're getting for all of that money. Last week, I mentioned just briefly the death of Samantha Smith, the airplane crash that killed her and her father in Augusta, Maine. There was a story from the San Jose Mercury, August 29, 1985, saying that the Soviet media continued insinuations that began right after Samantha's death. They hinted after her murder, they call it a murder, on Wednesday, that there was a conspiracy in her death. They referred to it as a conspiracy. In quote, "Reactionaries often threatened the young American and her parents, but they failed to make her feel threatened," the state television said after the day after the crash, adding that the plane had been diverted for an unspecified reason. The flight, originating in Boston, was scheduled to stop only in Augusta, Maine, Waterville, and Bangor. Those were the only places scheduled. A stop at Auburn, Maine, was added at the request of two passengers, I guess we'll never know who, the airline officials said. Pravda said that Samantha's father had told a Pravda correspondent, in quotes, "Most of the people warmly support us, but there are those who are displeased. Such people call us voluntary agents of Moscow and have sometimes threatened us with punishment." Well, she and her father did get that punishment, but they did receive threats, and it was in the newspapers and in the newspapers in the Soviet Union. Ruth Gordon passed away this week, and one of the obituaries giving her screen career and her life said that she met her husband, Garson Kanin, when he was in the OSS in 1941. I thought that was interesting because she had a son by another marriage, earlier marriage. His name is Jones Harris, and he was an early buff researcher into the Kennedy assassination, and he was very close to J. Edgar Hoover. And there were always questions about the role of the FBI and J. Edgar Hoover, certainly in protecting John Kennedy and also covering it up in their participation with the Warren Commission and questionable activities of the Bureau Chief Hoover and his agents. And Jones Harris wanted to prove beyond any doubt that J. Edgar Hoover was clinging, and his research was done on that basis to clear him of all possible talk. And I suppose as that trying to prove that became impossible, he dropped out. And his name is in some of the earlier listings of research buffs, but you haven't heard a word about Jones Harris. It's sort of like somebody trying to investigate Memi Ajaz's role with the Bulgarians and the KGB in shooting the Pope. And as the story unfolded in the past 4.5 years, it isn't the KGB or the Soviet intelligence, but it goes right to Ronald Reagan's friend Francesco Pazienza and Michael Ledeen and Alexander Haig and the CIA and the Italian military intelligence, which works with our CIA. So those people that want to prove a Soviet plot slough off and you don't hear from them. Claire Sterling is silent, and Michael Ledeen, the minute their names are mentioned, and the covert operations that they do, then you don't hear about them. So they fluff off. They'll be back again, but they fluff off right now and lay low, and the talk shows don't talk about the fact that they had them on and pushed their books or Paul Hensley's book, and that later other evidence comes in to suggest that they were part of a plot to create this story, and in return, Aja would be free. So there are people that start out with a particular goal in mind, and if it doesn't suit their need, they stop. Now, just two items here on the Joseph Mengele investigation, which I want to update for you as soon as possible and do some more information for you on the evidence and the experts. This is from the Washington Post, Saturday, August 17th, from Jerusalem. Mengele investigation is still open in Israel. Israel has yet to pronounce Joseph Mengele dead, despite evidence that he could have drowned in Brazil 6 years ago. In principle, we have closed the file, the foreign ministry said. The U.S. and Brazilian forensic examiner said in June the remains from the grave were Joseph Mengele, and they said a memorandum was sent to our diplomatic representatives abroad saying that while the U.S. Justice Department has closed the case, we are still checking the matter. So the Israeli embassies have not officially closed the case, as many of them did when they said Martin Bormann was dead, and he isn't dead. Then another story from the Washington Times, August 16th. Mengele team seeks verification. The head of the American team that identified the skeleton in Brazil as being Joseph Mengele said yesterday that he hopes the man's diaries will bear out the details of their findings. Their findings aren't holding up, so they want his diary. Dr. Ali Hameli, Delaware's chief medical examiner, found a shoulder and a hip had been fractured and evidence of arthritis in the spine, hands, and feet, none of which appear in known medical records of Mengele. We hope that an investigation of Mengele's diaries will find him complaining of these. Now, the man in charge of the diary and the handwriting and that part, the photographs and that part of the investigation, was a Mr. Crown from the CIA. So if the medical evidence depends upon the diary, you could be sure they'll come up with a diary. The article continues, Dr. Hameli discussed the case with reporters and other members of the team. They're drafting a detailed final report. Dr. Lowell Levine from New York said there's no doubt in his mind that the records are clear that it's Joseph Mengele. But Dr. Hameli also asked Senator D'Amato at the hearings that he had with just the senator and one other aide, and I want to get into detail with those later. I'll share those with you another time, not this week. But he said, I hope you save the skeleton, because he as much as said, this is all we have now. This is as clear as we can identify it. But hold on to it. Don't destroy it. And if something else comes in, I'll change my mind. Now, when Lee Harvey Oswald died, killed by Jack Ruby, there was no diary or sign of a diary among his possessions in his room or Mrs. Payne's house or anything that Lee Oswald had. But in April 64, on the cover of Life magazine, huge pages of handwriting of Lee Harvey Oswald. And the appointment with Life magazine was set up by Representative Gerald Ford, who then became President of the United States and was on the Warren Commission. This diary, the original, was never seen by any member of the commission. No fingerprints were taken from it. Lee Harvey Oswald didn't write or talk that way. And Ford had this up. This was in April, and the Warren Commission would be done in September. They wanted to show the mind of Lee Harvey Oswald in the Soviet Union. So maybe by December 85, some future president of the United States will be traveling in Brazil. Maybe that's why that one member of Congress went down alone to Sao Paulo just last couple of weeks. Some future president is going to come out with a diary translated, and Joseph Mengele will be saying in German, ouch, my foot hurts, or my hand hurts, I can hardly write. And then they'll say, oh, see those bones, that arthritis, that's him. And they'll match the diary. They tried to create a fabric of a personality of Lee Oswald through a thing that was obviously forged. It wasn't anything like the letters he wrote to the Soviet embassy or to the Albert Schweitzer College for entering the college or his Marine papers. The man was literate and highly technical in his radio work and in his intelligence. So the diary was a fraud then. And now, even though they've gone through these bones and examinations in Brazil, Dr. Hameli says, well, if we know it's the diary, then we'll know if it's Mengele. If you depend on the diary for the conclusion, then you know they'll come up with a diary. eventually, unless people just ignore it and let this story slide, which they obviously seem to be doing for the most part. Incidentally, in the book The Great Conspiracy by Michael Sayers and Albert Kahn, it describes in the United States the first Nazi cell set up in 1924 in the United States. And just incidentally, it mentions a person who lived in San Francisco and then went over Asia and to Europe and South America to set up these Nazi cells. His name is Mr. Von Siatsky, V-O-N-S-I-A-T-S-K-Y. And he opened up offices in New York City, San Francisco, Los Angeles, San Paulo, Brazil, and Harbin, Manchuria. Now, Harbin is where Jean de Morenschild came out of Tsarist Russia into Harbin, her family. Then she married George de Morenschild, who was the benefactor for Lee Harvey Oswald of food and clothing and jobs, and took care of him from the time he arrived at the Soviet Union until he made his necessary contacts to become a patsy, a fall guy, at the time of the assassination of John Kennedy. But there's major cities in the United States, three of them, and then San Paulo, Brazil, and Harbin, Manchuria, which were all five, were the headquarters for the Nazi cells that were to be set up and filled with Nazis as the war progressed. They weren't at war yet. There was a long way to go. But Hitler was just beginning to rearm. They were rearming Germany. Incidentally, I do have two points of interest, good news, in a way. I talked about Herbert E. Ellingwood, the man that was supposed to take a job in the Justice Department that would make decisions on the appointments of future justices of the Supreme Court, over 200 of them. Well, that nomination, I understand, is going to be turned down. He's the Christian fundamentalist who believes that all jobs and all judges should be Christians, and of course not have abortions and other things like that. He favors Christian lawyers and wanted to put them into the network of our Justice Department. As I understand it now, that his name has been withdrawn for this appointment to be the chief of appointing other judges, including the Supreme Court, when an opening is there. Also, you might have read about the Sinfuel operation being closed, the Sinfuel Agency. In May of 1984, a little over a year ago, I did a broadcast on Sinfuel. One of the more sinister things was bringing them to this country, paid by our taxpayers, and have Krupp, the multinational German corporation, open up and be part of the United States energy process, considering the danger of IG Farben and Auschwitz and the concentration camps in Germany. We were going to bring the Krupps, who were partners along with IG Farben, into the United States. There were a lot of investigations and improprieties and so forth. I discussed them, as I say, in May, and there's going to be some very expensive payoffs into millions of dollars, but the Sinfuel Agency, it was very close to Edwin Meese also, and Robert Keith Gray and some of the very high-ups in Washington is going to be closed. Now, this is the anniversary, second anniversary since the downing of the Korean airline, when Larry McDonald went down with it. A representative from Georgia, a member of the United States Congress. Nation magazine last year did an article on questions about the Korean airline written by David Pearson. And this year they have come up with a second article. This is August 17th, 1985. And you can get the library copied if you want, or get Nation magazine. And they came up with some more on Korean airline. They've done now 2 years research. The articles were put together by David Pearson and two other writers working with Nation magazine, John Keppel and David Korn. And in this article, they ask the questions, repeat the questions that weren't answered last year. They start by saying there's unanswered questions. And after 1 year, there were serious questions to be asked about what did the United States government know about the Korean airline going down, because it wasn't just another plane that went down like these recent planes. This was a happening that the President of the United States used for very harsh language, and it began another escalation, a notch in the escalation of the real war, not any Cold War anymore. So they're asking, what did the government know a year ago, and when did they know it? And the conclusion a year ago was that the American people were victims of a high-level government conspiracy, or there was a complex set of intelligence and electronic equipment that had a terrible failure. Well, of course, they continue to ask questions with the opinion that there must be a higher level of conspiracy, that all of these fail-safes in the electronics of the airplane and communication systems and intelligence in that area couldn't have all failed. And this article says that the response of the administration was to keep referring back to the International Civil Aviation Organization. And Mr. Eagleburger, Lawrence Eagleburger, was on CBS this week with two of these writers, two men who've written, another author, and one from this group, David Korn. And Eagleburger was deputy assistant to the head of the State Department when this plane went down. Eagleburger went on from the State Department and the Korean Airline to become president of Kissinger Associates, the organization the governor, Representative Henry Gonzalez calls least an agency that our State Department is leased to. And so Eagleburger did his final grand slam in government work. I suppose getting this KAL plane down, which was very, very important to not only to down, but to cover up, and then went on to Kissinger Associates. So by citing the International Civil Aviation, the government has passed off the House of Representatives and Senate any further investigation, and Eagleburger said we'll go back to the International Civil Aviation. Well, this isn't, they talk about civil aviation, but this wasn't a civil case. It was a commercial airline, but it was a military operation in the terms of the rhetoric of what happened, of where they were flying over and what was taking place at that time and who was on the plane. So they passed it off as a civil problem, which it isn't. Now, as the second anniversary approached, these men came up with new evidence that cast doubts on the original version, and they said since this time there seems to be an effort to intimidate. David Korn said this, that there's official obstacles to discourage research in the case. Now, we researchers in the Kennedy assassination know what intimidation and obstacles are. They said the plane approached sensitive Soviet military installations deliberately, and then they asked the question, six questions. Was Flight 007 on an intelligence mission? 2, what was the nature of the mission? 3, who planned it? 4, were the pilots aware of it? 5, why was a civilian airliner used? And 6, was the U.S. government involved? And they came to the conclusion that there is more to look into and that there's a cloak of official secrecy. Now, they write 15 pages on information on the Korean Airline, and there's been books out on it. Bob Cutler has done a lot of work on the Korean Airline. And the only thing that's left out of this, just as it happens with the Kennedy assassination after years and years of time passing, is leaving out the names or the importance of Representative Larry McDonald. How they can leave that out as a factor when they ask the question, why a civilian airline, was the government involved, who planned it? How they can leave this out. When Jonestown happened and Representative Leo Ryan was murdered down there, things were brought out about his being on the House Intelligence Committee, how he stopped the CIA troops fighting in Angola, and his background was brought up a lot of times in conjunction with Jonestown. But Larry McDonald's name is never mentioned. That is something that is very, very quiet. Now, you're not talking about an ordinary passenger. We're talking about a man. He was a veteran of the Vietnam Wars. He was chairman of Western Goals, and I'll do more on that in a minute. He was the head of the John Birch Society, which tells you something if you studied the history and early background of the Birch Society and how influential it's been in shaping various coups, such as John Kennedy's assassination, the links of the Birch Society, that, and Robert Kennedy's murder, and Martin Luther King. Now, a man, Robert Byron Watson, named Larry McDonald in affidavits for the House Select Committee, named him as being part of the people who planned the murder of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King. And the chief of this organization for the John Birch Society is Larry McDonald, the head of the Western Goals. John Reese writes for John Birch Society, is the head still of Western Goals, with very close ties to Daniel Graham, planning the Star Wars offensive that might break up this new peace gesture or meeting that the president is trying to back out of. There's a lot of heavy weight that was behind Larry McDonald and the people he knew. Now, March the 3rd, 1983, Ronald Reagan gave a speech written by Edward Teller on the Strategic Defense Initiative, known as the Star Wars Project. And just as he was writing that speech, and as he was presenting it, more information came out about Ronald Reagan's familiarity with Edward Teller from the time he was governor in California, and he was put in by the Birch Society. He went to Lawrence Livermore Lab, where they showed him the space weapons, the laser weapons, the space wars projects, and they were instrumental in the atomic bomb projects. And Edward Teller, who's on the board of Western Goals with Larry McDonald, was the father of the hydrogen bomb, the big H. And they brought the Nazi scientists from Europe, the paperclip scientists, worked with them ever since World War II. Edward Teller was instrumental in the entire Star Wars project to make it saleable to the United States, call it strategic defense when it's been exposed as being an offensive system that can make the first strike for war. Now, while this was going on, this was March of 83, at the same time this was going on, there was this large lawsuit of a group of almost 150 people suing the Los Angeles Police Department for spying on them. There were blacks, the Black Panthers, the Venceremos, people supporting Cesar Chavez, the gay rights, the anti-abortion, the anti-Vietnam. All these things were going into computers, and right 2 months after the Star Wars speech of Edward Teller and the Defense Department plans for this big project, by May of 1983, the story broke on the links of the Los Angeles Police Department and Western Goals together. And Western Goals had that computer linked to the police department. They may have it in 50 police departments, because John Reese used to write a directory for the police intelligence all over the country and still does do that kind of information and get it out to police on law-abiding citizens. But at the time that that story broke, Larry McDonald was very, very important, and it was just 2 weeks before his death in August of 83 when the Washington Post cited that he was going to have to come to California and testify about the computers. But the people on the board of Western Goals were so important, there was no way that Larry McDonald was going to testify on this material. And I wrote the article for Larry Flint on the Korean Airlines and Western Goals and the importance of these people. But they're not people out of the past. I just was noting six different incidences that took place this morning just before I did the broadcast that relate to an active organization, Western Goals. But it has no Larry McDonald. But the people involved in that have gone on with their activities and are very important to what is going to happen to our future. When I first got up this morning, I was reading an article in Mother Jones that somebody sent to me. Thank you. I'll thank you now. And they also sent me, she sent me the one from Nation Magazine. And I was reading those. It's by Jerry Saunders, called The Terminators. And in this issue, they're talking about John Singlaub and the World Anti-Communist League. And John Singlaub's name has been in the news the past week in Time Magazine, funding the Contras and other articles that he's been getting tax deductions from the IRS for military units that weren't supposed to fight in Central America. Now, in addition to Edward Teller and the Star Wars, John Singlaub is on the board of Western Goals. Next came the NBC Morning News, September the 2nd, and there's a conversation about the ending of the war, the signing of the peace treaty with Japan. And for some reason or other, they brought up what happened at Pearl Harbor. And out comes Admiral Thomas Moore, who was former chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff. And he's talking about what happened at Pearl Harbor 44 years ago. Now, Moore is on the board of Western Goals. Can you imagine this organization, if it ever got into the courts and their computers into the LAPD that tied directly to Edwin Meese and Ronald Reagan when they were here in California for 8 years? Now, Moore's name came up with regards to Yeoman Redford at the time of Watergate. He was stealing papers from the President of the United States to give to Henry Kissinger. And years later, we find out that Henry Kissinger's mentor, Fritz Kramer, shares offices with Daniel Graham, who is the front man for the Washington front man, former head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, for Edward Teller and the Star Wars. The same offices, and I've cited this for you many times, but here it is in the news today. You see Admiral Moore, and he also is on the board of directors of Western Goals, and Singlaub is in the news a lot these past few weeks. Then I was watching CBS News, and after one, there was some short program interviewing people making job changes, Then they have a big drawing with a quotation of Peter Drucker. And the quotation was, if you don't like your job, you can always change it. And they quote, as Peter Drucker said, if you don't like. Well, Peter Drucker brought Fritz Kramer to this country, the Fritz Kramer who shares offices with Daniel Graham of Western Gold. Graham is close, very close to John Reese of Western Gold, has a close relationship with that organization and with Edward Teller, and they were on the program. Then the commercial, I believe, was CBS again. I don't think I changed the station. September the 2nd, this was just this morning, there's a commercial by about Millikan Fabrics, how they wash and wear well and so forth. Well, Robert Millikan of Millikan Fabrics, a long partner of J. Peter Grace, who has a important position with Ronald Reagan regarding our budget, he's on the board of Western Gold. So I'm watching the program. They're talking about Peter Drucker. They're talking about Millikan Fabrics, Admiral Moore. And I'm thinking of all the messages that have come through just this week. And then I read my morning papers after I had breakfast, and there's an obituary of Taylor Caldwell, who passed away. She's a famous author. Well, she was on the board of Western Gold, and she also was on the board of immigration at a very important period, and I'll share that with you in a few minutes, what job she had from 1924 to 1931 with the Board of Immigration, making sure that certain immigrants didn't come here and the not right ones, the pro-Hitler ones, were coming in. Taylor Caldwell died, another board member of Western Gold. And then the morning, another article, September the 2nd, 1985, behind the decision to test anti-satellite weapons. And again, that goes back to Teller and to Graham, Teller of Western Gold, all of them relating to Larry McDonald, who was the head of that organization. He's the one that went down. And articles such as Nation don't have one mention of the passenger. They ask, how would it happen? What happened? Who was behind it? Who planned it? Were the pilots aware? Why a civilian airline? Was the U.S. government involved? But they don't have any hint that a man named Larry McDonald, with this many contacts besides being president of the Birch Society and with the mafia down in Georgia and the assassination teams. So then we see the satellite anti-satellite weapon, and the article says the decision came from the White House, not the military. So just identical to dropping the atomic bombs at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, they came from inside the head of the head man, like President Truman. The Pentagon, the military advisors, didn't say use them. The head people had in their mind so that the people that worked their way up in the military have not been evidently behind this so much, and they're not making the decision on the satellites. They didn't make it on the atomic bomb. It's coming from inside the Oval Offices and the planners, and, of course, Kissinger Associates and Fritz Kramer and that gang have a lot of decisions that go on in the Oval Office. Now, there's a small newspaper, a little 20-page newsletter that comes out of England called The Lobster. And I wrote to Robin Ramsey about some articles I'd done on Kennedy or the Korean airline, and he wrote back this kind of a nasty letter. Well, I know about you, but I don't believe in your theories, and we're not theorists or conspiracy buffs. I'll have to find the letter for you. It was a really snide kind of a thing, and I passed it off. And then he also sent me, I paid for them, some copies of his magazines, and the volume 4 of The Lobster, he writes about Western Gold and the LAPD, and Larry Flint's article in Hustler on the Korean airline and Larry McDonald, and the importance of Larry McDonald and John Reese and John Reese's wife working for Senator Joe McCarthy. And he's quoting for 1.5 pages my entire article, but because he thinks Larry Flint has written it, it's okay to write it. But if Mae Bresl had written it, that wasn't okay. So they pass this off, many people, the material I'm doing, because if Mae Bresl says it, she's getting too close. But they know that Larry Flint won't come up with any more to make any more connections, so it's safe to say it. True, his name was on that article, but many people, researchers, knew that I wrote that for him, and it was okay for me to have it on there. But Mr. Ramsey didn't want to acknowledge that it was my work, and he would quote Larry Flint and say, well, I don't like your theories, but this I want to print. And then he prints material which is important to get out about the relationship of the LABD to the organization known as Western Gold. Well, Western Gold opened up in London, and I was asking him to check that out. Now, that part of having Larry McDonald on the airplane is terribly important. I can't emphasize it enough. Many of you know I have talked about it for a long, long time. But because it's the anniversary of the Korean airline going down, I just state again that as long as they avoid the names of the people that worked around Larry McDonald, they miss the point of why he went down at that time. Roy Cohn also was in the news this week, and Roy Cohn was on the board. He still is of Western Goals. So the connections to the Luftwaffe, to a gentleman on the board of Western Goals, to Hans Ulrich Rudell, is primary to the Joseph Mengele story and keeping the Odessa network going. This was an organization that had to go forward and is going forward. And if Larry McDonald was a stumbling block and they got caught with a computer, they had to get rid of him, and that was done. It's not very hard to do, and we have a bunch of assassins in this government that will plan things, and the Korean airline going down at that time wasn't for just one reason. It wasn't to get rid of Larry McDonald. There were a lot of other reasons why they were doing it at that particular time. I'll take a one-minute break here and just do a little bit more about Western Goals and Larry McDonald, and then get on with some other matters.